Okay, we are on the last daf of Sota, daf Mem Tet. Okay, we're starting at line number 3, the end of the line. Amar Rabbi Ila bar Yevrechia. Ilmalei tefilato shel David hayu kol Yisrael machrei revav. Okay, so we had this whole, just before we even start, we had this whole daf yesterday about the impending doom and how everything, you know, or maybe not impending, the actual doom, right? You know, they were, in the Mishnah, they discussed kind of the feeling after the Churban of just, this is it, right? That everything's falling apart and everything's getting worse. And now we start to see a little bit of a hint of hope. Okay, so he starts off with, if it weren't for the Tefillah of David, all of the Jewish people would be Mochrei Revav. They'd be sellers of, it's not exactly clear what this is. Rashi says it's Davar Ma'us, like Chelev and Shuman, and it gets sticky to your clothes and it's gross. So anybody who works with that is only going to be someone who's very poor. Some people say it's the stuff that's left over from the bees, and then maybe that's the connection here. We had the bees and the honey, and that the wax that's left from at the end of the bee process, that's the honey-making process, that's, they dealt with the wax of that. Okay, somehow it's either wax or some sort of fatty substance that's kind of gross. So how do we know the Tefillah of David is what prevented us all from being Mechrei Revav? Shenemar, Shita Hashem Morah Lachem, which is Hashem, you should put upon them majesty, that they should be, you know, their rule should be over others, meaning that they shouldn't be ruled upon and they shouldn't be poor. But Amar Abi Labram Yivrechi, and now we're having a slew of his statements. Ilmalei Tefillato Shel Chavakuk, if it weren't for the Tefillah of Chavakuk, Hayu Shnei Talmidei Chachamim Mitkasim B'Talit Achat, Ve'Oskim B'Torah, Shenemar, because in Sefer Chavakuk it says, Hashem Shamati Shimacha, Hashem Shamati Shimacha, Yareti Hashem Pa'alcha, Bekerev Shanim Chayehu. Okay, so what does this mean, Bekerev Shanim Chayehu? Al tikra b'kerev shanim, ela b'keruv shnayim. What happens when people don't have enough money? They share, right? This is, they're saying, Talmidei Chachamim, that we're mitkasim b'talit achad. In other words, they'd all be, every two people sharing one coat, one talit, because they wouldn't have anything more than that. So they're saying, if it weren't for his tefillah, what would his tefillah say? B'kerev shanim, which they say, b'keruv shnayim, chayehu, give them life. In other words, the people who are huddling together in twos because they can't afford to buy their own clothes, you should be chayehu, you should help them live. So his tefillah basically saved them. V'amar b'ilai ben yivrechya, shnei talmidei chachamim hamalchim baderech, ve'ein b'nehem divrei Torah, ru'uyin lisareth ba'esh. Okay, two Talmidei Chachamim who are walking and they don't speak Divrei Torah, they should be burned. Shenemar, Vayihi hem ahochim haloch v'daber. This is with Elisha and Eliyahu at the end of Eliyahu's life. V'hinei rechav esh. Right, there was a rechav esh that passed between them, and they weren't destroyed by the fire. Why weren't they destroyed by the fire? Tama di'ika dibur. Haleka dibur ru'yin lisaref. Okay, it was the dibur that was between them, because it says there, hochim haloch vidaber. They were talking, obviously. What were they talking? They must have been talking divrei Torah. And that's what saved them from the fire that passed through them that didn't burn them. So what you see in these two things, by the way, so far, is this is a little from the negative, right? But it's also the positive. And as Elisha and Eliyahu were saved from the fire because they talked divrei Torah. So there's tefillah and Torah, those two themes just being discussed here. Amar Rabbi Ila ben Yivrechya, Shnei Talmidei Chachamim Hadarim Be'ir Achad Ve'ein Nochin Ze Lazeh Bahalacha. Okay, now we get to a new thing. Two Talmidei Chachamim who are learning, but they're not behaving appropriately with each other when it comes to halacha, right? They're not Nochin Ze Lazeh. They're fighting about it. They're disrespectful to each other about it. Echad Meit Ve'echad Goleh. What happens to them? One gets killed and one goes to Galut. Okay, what does this mean? This means like one accidentally, it's not galut like galut Bavel or something, right? Exile. It's galut of Ir Miklat. So one will accidentally kill the other and the other will end up going to Ir Miklat. Okay, that's what's going to happen if they live in a city and they fight about halakha. How do we know this? Shenemar, in Ir Miklat, what does it say? Lanu shama rotzeach asher yirtzach et re'eyu bivli da'at. Okay, who runs to the Ir Miklat? One of the people described is, he kills his friend without knowledge. Okay, now what do we generally, that means he didn't realize he was killing him, right? He didn't do it intentionally. But what do we say here? Ein dat ela Torah. Bivli dat means without Torah. Okay? Shenemar, how do we know the bli dat is Torah? Nidmu ami mibli da'at. This is a nevuah in Hosea about the people are without da'at. And what does it mean there? It means without Torah. So they're saying, if Talmidei Chachamim are not nochin ze lezeh b'halacha, then one will end up, that's the bivli da'at. He's going to kill his friend, bivli da'at, and then one will get killed, and the other will have to go to Ir Mikla. Amar of Yehuda Bereid Rabbi Chia, kol tami chacham ha'osek b'torah mitoch hadchak, tfilato nishmat. We're a little bit combining the two themes, the tfilah and the Torah. If you learn Torah from a place of poverty, in other words, not a place from great wealth, but out of poverty, meaning you're struggling and yet you still make time to learn Torah. So if you learn Torah mitoch hadchak, tfilato nishmat. That's the tfilah that will be accepted. How do we know this? Shene'emar, this is from Yeshayahu, Ki am b'tzion yeshev b'Yerushalayim b'chol lo tivke. Okay, they're sitting in Tzion. Okay, they're sitting in Yerushalayim b'chol lo tivke. Okay, they're not going to cry. Chanon yichancha l'kol za'akecha. God will have chen upon you from your cries out to him. Kishamato ancha. When he hears you, he will answer you. Okay, so far that doesn't say anything about poverty, right? That's just saying Hashem will answer the prayers of those people. You will no longer cry, right? Those sitting in Tzion after the destruction, right? You will no longer cry. God will help you. He'll hear your cries. Uktiv batrei. And what does it say right after that? Benatan Hashem lechem lechem tzar umayim lachatz. You'll have food bekoshi. In other words, so now they're saying those who have food bekoshi, meaning they're coming from a place of poverty, they're the ones whose prayers are going to be heard. Rabbi Ava Omer, Mashbi'ino to miziv hashchina. Masbi'ino to miziv hashchina. He gets his satiation from the ziv hashchina itself. Okay, and that someone who learns out of poverty, from a place of poverty, he'll be basically sustained by God by God himself. Shene'emar, v'hayu einecha ro'ot et morecha. Okay, it says, this is also there. It says, v'natana lechem adonai lechem tzar, umayim lachatz, v'lo yikanef od morecha, v'hayu einecha ro'ot et morecha. Okay? Lo yikanef morecha means your teacher will no longer be hidden. Okay, we're going to use this, we're going to darshan this in 1 minute. But right now we're darshaning the end, which is, and your eyes will see your teacher. So what does it mean, your eyes will see your teacher? That God himself is going to come to you and bring you food. Rabbi Acha bar Hanina amar, Af ein hapergod nid al befanav shenemar v'lo yikanef od morecha. What does it mean, right? Lo yikanef means, right, he's hidden. What is hidden will now be revealed to you. It means he'll even get to see God. Right? We always say that God is mechorei pergod. It's a, right, it's like as if there's a sheet, a curtain, right? Something blocking, a mechitza, blocking us from God. And they're saying that person will even be able to get see God past the pergod. Okay, they're saying there's a great value to those who spend, and it's not only is learning Torah, but those who learn Torah from a place of poverty, which I think just means they make a greater sacrifice to acquire the Torah because they find time, despite the fact that they need to work, and yet they make the time, so they will be the ones who are all the more zocheh.
They've talked about the Kohen Gadol has to be especially wealthy.
Right. Well, the Kohen Gadol is also not the one who's the most learning all the time.
That.
Right,
we've
exactly.
That.
We've seen that he's a stuff, but not
that's part of the contrast.
Always learning. Right. Right, so there's a play always, and we can even see it a little bit later, although it's just kind of referenced. But there's a play always between having wealth, which gives you power, respect from the general people, and then on the other hand, right, there's the poverty, which when you work hard, despite the poverty, you know, you get rewarded because of the hard work that you've done. So that those are two different aspects. Now, there's the wealth is looked at in how it affects others around you and how they look at you and how they perceive you. So a leader who's wealthy, in general, will get more respect than the people. And that's one of the reasons the Kohen Gadol was meant to be wealthy. Another reason was he had to bring this Minchat Chavitin every day, and he had to be able to afford that. That was part of the issue, that he had to be able to afford to pay that every single day. If you remember, it was talked about that if he's not wealthy, people should give him money so he could be wealthy, so he can stay in his position, you know, maintain the position. Okay. So this whole section, okay, we're going to see, it's almost like a little bit of hope here, right? So we talked about tefillah and Talmud Torah. These are things that sustain people. These are things that will prevent poverty and other things. What you even see here is even the person who will be who's impoverished and will spend the time learning Torah will ultimately get out of his poverty. And then you have to say, well, then what happens, right? Then his reward for learning Torah will no longer be as great, according to this, right? Because at that point, he'll be out of poverty. Okay, Rashbag Omer, it's almost like this section is a bit of a reaction to the description in the previous page about all the bad things and how bad things were going. But now we're going to a little bit flip back now to some of the negative things. Rashbag Omer, we're flipping back really because we're going back to the Mishnah, right? Rashbag Omer Mishum Rabbi Yoshua. Miyom Shacharab Beit HaMikdash Ein. Remember there was this whole, right? There was a whole list of things, right? Miyom Shacharab Beit HaMikdash. Right, ein yom she'ein bo klala v'lo yered atal lebracha v'nital tam haperot. Right, and then Rabbi Yossi had said af nital shuman haperot, and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar said hataran natla tareach v'hamasrot natlu et shuman adagan. And the Chachamim omrim haznuk hakshavim kilu et hakol. Okay, that's the whole end of the Mishnah that we're going to relate to now. Okay, so Amar Rav, b'chol yom v'yom merubek klilato mishal chaviro. Wow, it's even worse, right? Every day the curse is worse than the day before. It's not just every day is cursed, but every day's curse is worse than the day before. How do we know this? Shneamar, okay, this is a pasuk from Devarim. Okay, this is in the Tochacha, in the end of Sefer Devarim. Baboker tomar mi yitain erev, uba erev tomar mi yitain boker. Part of the curse is going to be, in the morning you'll say, oh, I wish it was night. And at night you're going to say, oh, I wish it was morning. So now they're going to say, boker, hey, boker. I'm sorry, hey, boker. Which boker are we talking about? Tomorrow's boker, right? At night you're going to say, I wish it was morning, meaning the next morning, or meaning the previous morning. Ilem a boker de la machar, miyada mai have. It doesn't make sense that you'd be saying, I wish it was tomorrow already, because tomorrow is an unknown, right? In other words, you think it's bad now, but who knows? Tomorrow could be worse, so why are you hoping for tomorrow, right? This again goes with that depressing thinking, right? Sometimes you say, oh, tomorrow's another day, right? In other words, tomorrow.
Fresh start.
Right, fresh start. Ella, but it can't be because you don't know that. So Ella de chalif. It must mean the one that passed. And that's saying, right, I wish it were yesterday. Every day you're saying, oh, I wish it were yesterday. Yesterday was better, right? Or this morning was better than this evening. Ve'ala alma amai mekayim. So according to this, then, if things are so bad, so why is the world still existing, right? What sustains the world? If things keep getting worse, why is the world still here? Interesting answer. Akedusha desidra ve'ayeheshme rabba da'agadeta. Okay, what's keeping it alive? The Kedusha de Sidra, which is Uvalitzion, Goel Shave Pesha, right, that we say at the end of Tefillah every morning, that has in it Kedusha, it talks about the Malachim, and the Yeheshme Rabba, right, Kaddish, is what's keeping this alive. Okay, and here they say Kaddish of Agadita. So the Mepharshim try to understand what's this Kaddish of Agadita. Okay, I don't know if you're aware of this, but when people learn, right? When you learn a section, you usually say Kaddish after. Right? Like if you teach something in shul, they'll say Kaddish after that. Okay? And it comes from here. Okay? Because they're saying Kaddish to Agadita, and some people say, and especially Halacha. In other words, if some people say it's specifically Agadita. Why? Because Agadita is Mesameach Anashim. We talked about Agadita, how it's much easier to understand, and it gets to more people and more accessible. But some people say, no. It's if Agadita, which is less significant than Halacha, then all the more so Halacha. Okay, and that's the Yeheshme Rabba that's sustaining people. So again, it could be just Agadita, because everyone's learning mitoch simcha, or it's the Yeheshme Rabba that we say after Agadita and all the more so halacha, and that's where people get that if you learn something, you should say Kaddish after. Shneamar, Eretz, this is a pasuk from Iov, Eretz efata kemo ofel tzamavet velo starim. Okay, so they're saying, it's all, right, the world is very dark, and it's not starim. What does that mean? Hayesh starim tofia me'ofel. And it's once there is seder, which is this kedusha de sidra, they're saying, creates order. Okay, right? We all know when things are bad, right? Sometimes you just want order. You want your structure. You want your daily routine. So once there is seder, then you'll come out of the darkness, and that's what's saving the world, according to this. V'lo yared tal lebracha v'nital tam apiro. This is the continuation of the Mishnah. Tanya Rav Shum ben Elazar Omer. Tahara, here's another version here. The tara bit batla tam v'reach. Not just the reach, but also the tam. Okay? the lack of purity. When the Mefarshim say here that it's purity, tahara is not something tangible, and therefore what it created a loss of was also something not tangible. Taste and smell is not something you can touch, right? It's not tangible. Whereas maaser, the fact that they weren't doing truma to maasrot, bitel shumana dagan, that got rid of the fat, you know, the fat dagan, the healthy dagan, okay? Because that's something tangible, got rid of something tangible. Rav Huna eshkach tumrata dechinunita. Okay, this seems to be some very special date that he had, okay? Rav Huna found this very special date. Shakla, he took it, karcha besudre, he put it up, he wrapped it up in a sheet or a cloth. Ata rabbe berei, amale morchina recha dechaninuta. He said, I smell the smell of this special date. Amale beni tahara yesh becha. What did he say? If tahara, right, the lack of tahara caused us to lose the sense of smell and taste, and he was able to smell, even though it was wrapped up in a cloth, right, he could smell it. He says, you must have tahara in you. Okay, he says to his son, you must have this high madrega of tahara because you still have the sense of smell. So he says, Yahaveh Niyaleh, so he gives it to him. Okay, because he was so proud of his son, he had tahara, he gives him the special thing that he was saving for himself. Right, you see the fatherly, right, the, you know, something you save for yourself, right, but you see your son did something special, so you give it to him. But then the story is going to get interesting. Amar lei b'ni samachta et libi. Oh, sorry, I skipped the important part here. Okay, yaveh niyaleh, I skipped to the next yaveh niyaleh. Adahachi ata abba birei. In the meantime, Abba, the son of Rabba, okay, which is the grandson of Rav Huna, right? Rav Huna gave it to Rabba. Rabba now, his son comes along, okay? Ata Abba Bere, Shakla, he gave it to him, okay? Or he took it, right? He wanted it. Yahaveh Niyaleh, so he gives it to him, okay? He went and he took this state that his father gave to him because he was so proud of him and he gave it to his son. Okay, what do you think? Good thing, not a good thing? Not a good thing. Why? Why do you assume it's not a good thing?
Because if he had the virtue and his son didn't, then
it certainly could. Yeah, fair. So we're going to see right away, okay? Amar lei b'ni samachta et libi b'hikita et shinai. Okay, the same exact term we saw at the very top of the daf from we saw yesterday. But you blunted my teeth. Now, first you made me so happy, but then you blunted my teeth, almost like you slapped me in the face. Okay? Hainu da'amre inche. This is what people say. Now, it's interesting. He doesn't exactly say what Naomi said, which is what I also read from the story. I read what Naomi reads, which is what? His son got it for no reason. He didn't have any virtue. He didn't do anything special to have been deserving of it. And he just gave it to him. So maybe this is underlying what the words say here. But Hainu da'amre inche, this is what people say. This is what Rav Huna says to his son. Rachame da'aba abnei. Rachame da'bnei abnei. Abnei da'avuleh. The rachamim of a father is on his son, and the rachamim of a son is on his son, and not toward his father. That's what he was saying, is this is a slap in my face because you didn't have respect for me. Says, I wanted you to have it, and instead you gave it to your son. Which is a very strange thing, right? Because in a sense, if the rachamim of a father is on his son, then the rachamim of his son should be on his sons also, right? So that's why I think what Naomi said really has to be underplaying what's going on here, because what he's really saying is, you didn't respect me. How didn't you respect me? Because you didn't understand why I gave it to you. Because you didn't understand the value of this.
You give an elderly parent gives a special piece of jewelry to a precious to their child, and then the mother, the child doesn't want it, she gives it on to one of her children. It just makes the whole thing meaningless.
Right, yes, that's a good example. So what Naomi's saying is that Right. If a parent gives a child jewelry and the kid doesn't love it so much and they give it to their own child, you know, it's a little bit of a slap in the face of the parent.
You have to show
right.
The feeling.
It's interesting also about the relationship between a grandparent and a grandchild. It's different than the relationship between a grandparent and his own child, right? That there's sometimes a bit of a different relationship because that's their own child that they brought up, and they have sometimes different feelings toward that child than they do for their grandchild, which is interesting because you would think maybe not, you know, maybe... Anyway, I think part of this also is he's saying you missed the point of what this was and why I gave it to you. Okay. It also could be a little bit of this aspect of you don't have an understanding of history and of the perspective and what this was all about. In other words, you were breaking this mold of, right, the things were going downhill, and yet you were this one who came with the tahara that had already canceled the tahara. And you just kind of, you know, you blew it. Like, you didn't understand how special this was and how meaningful it was. Anyway, it's an interesting story. Okay, I'm sure there's lots more you can do with it. Rav Acha bar Yaakov itafil bei b'Rav Yaakov bar Barte. Rav Acha bar Yaakov, here's another grandparent. Once we're in grandparent-grandchild story, here's another one. Rav Acha bar Yaakov took care of his grandchild, okay, the son bar Barte, the son of his daughter. Ki gadol, when he got older, Amarle, the grandfather said to the grandchild, Eshki an Maya, please give me some water. Amarlo, the grandchild says to him, Lav barich ana, I'm not your son. Meaning, right? So it's a good question exactly what he was saying. Okay, some of the refreshmen can't imagine that he didn't give him the water. They say, no, he gave him the water, but he said, just know that I'm not obligated to do this for you. Words, this isn't kibud av ve'em. I don't have to respect my grandparent the way I respected my grandfather. My grandfather the way I respect my father. V'hainu da'an re'inche, and this is what people say, rave rave bar bar ta'ana. Bar bar ta'ana. Okay, they say, right, rave rave, right. Rabbi, Rabbi means, right, Rashi says, Gadel, Gadel, Oti, right? You can bring me up, but in the end, I'm not your son, okay? In other words, no matter what you do, right, this goes against those, right, when Moshe talks to Aaron's sons, and they say, right, he's called, it says, Ela Toldot Moshe Aaron, because he brought them up, and he was like his father, right? Here, you see, just by bringing someone up doesn't really make you 100% their father, or maybe Dafka, a grandparent, it would be different, maybe you could distinguish, but anyway. It's an interesting story. I think, again, this is coming here. Both these stories, if you think about it, shows what? The change among the generations of the respect of the elders, right? That the elders had a certain concept in mind, right? The grandfather felt, okay, it's my responsibility to take care of my grandchild. But the grandchild already, right, the way we always talk about nowadays, oh, you don't respect your parents the way we respected our parents or the way my parents respected their parents. That there's a little bit of a lack of respect going on, that there's a hidardirut, which is exactly what, you know, we discussed in the last few pages about things kind of deteriorating, a slow deterioration, and the later generations aren't acting the way the previous ones did.
Do you think it's a metaphor for the relationship we have with God?
Right.
I don't think it's
Very well could be a metaphor. It could be to be understood metaphorically as a relationship between us and God, and as, you know, whether we're children or grandchildren of God, and that, you know, we're already distancing ourselves, we're not. It definitely could be viewed metaphorically, yes.
And yet the same way a child can never love a parent the way a parent can love a child.
Right, and maybe that's pointing out the problem with that God created us. We're, so to speak, his children, but we can't really respect him the way he wants us to respect him.
And
so maybe we can never stand up to that. We can never live up to that standard. And maybe that's part of the problem. Yes, then. Okay. New Mishnah. Bepumos shel Aspasianus. Now we're going to go through all sorts of things. In the Pumos of Aspasianus, this was all near the time of the Churban. Okay. Gazru al atarot chatanim va'ala irus. Okay. They said chatanim can no longer wear these crowns. And the irus seems to be some type of drum. Bepumos shel Titus, which seems to be the same time period, although some people say maybe there was, Aspasianus was a little bit earlier in the battle, and Titus came a little bit more toward the end. Bepumos shel Titus gazru al atarot kalot. Now, not only the chatanim can't wear atarot, but also the kalot can't. Bishelo yilamed adam et beno yivanit. He shouldn't teach his son yivanit. We're going to see what this is in the Gemara. Bepumos ha'acharon, this is already after the Churban. They all explain it's Bar Kochba revolt. Okay, gazru shalot etzei hakala ba'apriyom betocha ir. Okay, that she shouldn't be carried on this apriyom. We saw this above Metzia in the other class we're learning, right? Where they carried her on this big bed, right? Like you see in movies when they carry with the four poles and someone's sitting on a chair. So she shouldn't do that. Virabotenu hitiru shetetzei hakala ba'apriyom betocha ir. But the rabbis matir this. We'll see why in the Gemara. Mishameit Rabbi Meir. Now we're going to have a whole slew. Okay, this was all, right, historically what was going on when the Romans came and then the Bar Kochba revolt and bad things happening, right, like the Churban. But now we're going to get to when certain rabbis died. Okay, now we talk about the significance of the Talmidei Chachamim. When certain rabbis died, things went bad. Mishameit Rabbi Meir batlu moshlei mishalim. Those who told parables were no longer around. They're basically saying that each of these rabbis had a special thing about him, and after that, no one could ever do it the way they did. Mishamet ben Azai batlu hashakdanim. Those are people who are very diligent. Mishamet ben Zoma batlu hadarshanim. Those who knew how to darshan well. Mishamet Rabbi Akiva batel kvod haTorah. Okay, the respect for Torah. Mishamet Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa batlu anshe maaseh. We saw him a lot in Ta'anit, that he was a miracle maker. So no one can do these miracles anymore. Mishamet Rabbi Yossi katanta pasku chasidim. Okay, there were no more chasidim. He was the last of the pious ones. Belamanik krashmo katanta. Why was that his name? Shayak katanta shel chasidim. He was the smallest of the chasidim. In other words, sounds like from the pshat that there were no more big pious people anymore, and he was the last pious person, and he wasn't even such a big pious person. Mishamer Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai batel ziva chokma. Okay, how would they translate ziva chokma? The splendor of wisdom. Mishamer Rabban Gamliel Azakein batel kuvod haTorah, respect for Torah. Umeta tahara uprishut. Okay, and purity and prishut is separating. What's the word? Asceticism. Mishamer Rabbi Yishmael ben Pavi b'tela ziv hakihuna. Okay, he was a kohen. Some people say he was the son of Kimchit, the one who was zocheh to have kohenim gedolim come from her, because the walls of her house never saw her hair. Mishamer Rabbi batel anava v'yirat chet. When Rabbi died, there was no more humility and fear of sin. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, the Gemara starts out with another braita, similar things. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair Omer, Mishacharav Beit HaMikdash, Boshu Chavirim. The people who write the Chavirim, or always the people who keep halacha, were embarrassed. Ubnei Chorin, V'chafu Rosham, V'nidaldalu Anshe Maaseh. Okay, so they covered their heads, and the Anshe Maaseh petered out. V'gavru Ba'alei Zroa, U'Ba'alei Lashon. People who use their mouths and their koach to get things, right? The bullies almost, and the big tough people. Ve'ein doresh, ve'ein mevakesh, ve'ein shoel. And there's no one searching, there's no one looking, there's no one asking. Okay, obviously three different terms that mean something similar, but obviously each one's a little bit different. There's no one looking for Torah anymore, no one looking for God. Ami lanu lishain. What more do we have? We're going to see this refrain. Okay, this is like a pizmon we're going to see throughout the daf. Who do we have to rely on? Alavinu shebashamayim. That's all we have left. We've kind of lost everything else. The only thing left is to just rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Lezer HaGadol Omer, Miyom shacharah beit hamikdash sharu chakimaya lemahavi kesafraya usafraya kechazanya. Okay, well, I'll stop for a second. The chachamim now became sofrim. Everybody basically moves down a level. The chachamim are the highest level. They now became sofrim, which are the scribes, right? They're obviously not as smart as the chachamim. The scribes are like chazanim, which are the shamashim, right? They're like, taking care of things. Chazanya ka'ama da'ara, the chazanim, the shamashim, are like the ama aretz now. The ama da'ara, azla vidal dildala. They are even deteriorating, the ama aretz, okay? If they weren't bad enough, they're even worse now. Ve'ein shoel, ve'ein mevakesh, same thing now. Nobody's asking, nobody's searching. You don't even have your ein doresh, right? Which seems to be the higher level. You don't even have that. They're not even telling you that. Like, obviously, you don't have that. Al mi yesh lehisha'en, al avinu shebashamayim. Okay, so as if like this is the end. Now we start to hear, though, and this is very typical. Okay, we saw this in Kuma Medina, and or more like in around 1967. That what was the whole pull to say, oh, things are or in a sense things are rough or things are great, like in 67. But this is all right. Looking at all the suffering as what as ikvota de Mashiach, right? That this is all bringing the Mashiach, because before the Mashiach we have this tradition, and part of it comes from here. A lot of it appears in Sanhedrin also, and in other places, that it obviously is based on the Nevi'im. Be'ikvot the Mashiach, before the Mashiach comes, things are going to be really bad. Chutzpah yaskei, okay, there's going to be a lot of chutzpah, okay, chatzufim. Be'yoker ya'amir, okay, and the arrogance is going to be abundant. Hagefen titein pirya v'hayayim biyoker. There's going to be lots and lots of fanim. There's going to be tons of grapes, but yet the wine is still going to be very expensive. Okay, usually supply and demand, right? We'll cut the prices here. It's not going to work. The yayin's going to be very expensive. Umalchut tehafech leminut. The rulers are going to be minim and not the Jews. Ve'ein tochachat. There's no one's going to be able to rebuke anybody else. Why? Because nobody's can't rebuke someone if you're doing it yourself, right? In other words, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Beit vad yeh liznut. Okay, the Beit Vad is where the Chachamim will get together. That's going to turn into a house, a whorehouse. The Hagalil Yecharev, the Galil will be destroyed. The Hagavlan Yishom, some people say that this is the Golan. Okay, some people say it means the border. There's some people say it's actually totally different interpretation. It comes from Gevel, which is the Gvil, the parchment. It actually appears with a Vav usually. The parchments, meaning the parchments of the Torah, okay, will be desolate, meaning there won't be parchments of Torah anymore. No one will be learning them. Okay, so it's unclear whether this means a physical location or maybe the Torah itself. Okay, the border, people on the borders are going to be wandering from city to city and no one's going to be nice to them. Okay, the chachma of the sofrim will be disgusting, like destroyed. Everyone will hate the yirechet. It will disappear, the truth. Na'arim pnez kenim yalbinu. Okay, this refers back to what we saw in the end, right before the Mishnah, that the children will embarrass the older people. Kenim ya'amdu mipnei ketanim. And this kenim will have to respect the younger people. It's exactly what was described there, that the grandfather took care of the child and the child just didn't even give him water. Ben menavel av, bat kama bima, right? The son will disgrace the father. The daughter will come up against her mother. Kala b'chamota, the daughter-in-law to her mother-in-law. That we see often enough, actually. But, okay, the daughter-in-law to the mother-in-law. Oyvei ish anshei beto. What will be the enemy of man? The people in his house, which actually a little bit references the sota, right? The house is where, you know, you expect to have security, and that's where the sota, you know, goes wrong. Pnei hador kipnei hakelev. The face of the generation is like the face of the kelev. Okay, the kelev is always seen as like a bad and a, right, which is interesting because we always see a kelev as someone loyal, but in the sources they talk about a kelev very disrespectfully. Haben eino mitbayesh me'aviv. And the child is not embarrassed in front of his father. I guess in front of his father, or what does it mean, me'aviv? In the presence of his father. Okay. Again, alma yesh lanu lisha'en, al avinu shebashamayim. Okay, this is a clear refrain in the Mishnah, right? That this is who we have to rely on, avinu shebashamayim. Okay, this actually, I just realized now, this is, right, it says this was a Tana Rabban, right. It appears here that there's two versions about whether this is actually part of the Mishnah or this is a separate Braita. If you look back where it says Gemara on page Mem Tanamun Aleph, it says it in brackets, Gemara Tana Rabbanan, which means that according to some of the versions, this was all part of the Mishnah. But when it says it in brackets, it means it's actually not part of the Mishnah, and it's supposed to be really, the Gemara starts there. I didn't notice that really when I was preparing, so I didn't look up really what it would pay to look up old versions of the Mishnah to see if there's some in the old printed versions, if this appears or not in the actual Mishnah. Okay, Amar Rav, lo shanu ela shamelach v'gafrit, aval shel hadas v'shel vere mutar. Now we're talking about the keter of the atara of the chatanim. We're only talking about when they said they couldn't wear an atara, they meant if it was made of salt and gafrit, what's gafrit? Like a
sulfur.
Aval shel hadas v'shel vere mutar. Okay, but it's made of leaves, it's okay. Shmuel omer, af shel hadas v'shel vered asur. But shel kanim v'shel chelat mutar. If it's made of reeds and bulrush, then, how do you pronounce it, bulrush?
Bulrushes.
Bulrushes, then it's allowed. V'levi omer, af shel kanim v'shel chelat asur. That's also asur. V'chein tani levi b'matnite, af shel kanim v'shel chelat asur. Okay, there's different opinions about whether they allowed certain types or they didn't allow any. Okay, that's the machloket here. V'ali irus. My irus, what is this irus? Amar Rabbi Elazar, tavla dechab puma. It's a drum with one.
It's a bell with one clapper.
A bell with one clapper. Okay, it could be a bell with one clapper, some sort of drum with only one opening. Rabba Bar Rav Huna, it's unclear to all the sources. I looked up different interpretations what exactly these musical instruments are. Okay, again, it's a problem that they lived, we don't know exactly what their musical instruments look like. Rabba Bar Rav Huna avile liberei tanbura. This sounds like a tambourine, okay? And the Quran, they actually translate it as a tambourine. I don't know how they translate it in English here.
Timbrel.
What?
Timbrel.
Okay, so the Quran translates it as a tambourine. He gave his son, let's just say a tambourine, at avua tavre. He broke it. Okay, the father comes and breaks it. Amarle, again, the same thing of the father and son, right? The son not getting it, and the father comes and breaks it. Amarle, michlaf betavla dechab puma. People are going to confuse this. Yes, in theory it's allowed, but people will confuse this with a drum with one opening. So zil avidle, go and make yourself a puma dechatzva, or a puma dekpiza. This seems to be take like a cod, a vessel, you know, and just stick something on top of it and drum like that. Okay, but don't use a tambourine or something like that, which seems to be a little closer to that kind of drum. B'pumah shel titus gazru al atarot kalot. Okay, what are these atarot kalot? My atarot kalot. Amar Rabbi Ruchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ir shel zahav. If you remember this, we saw it in Shabbat. We've seen it in other places. It was this gold, like a crown that they would wear on their heads that had the skyline of Jerusalem on it. And that's what they would wear, and that's what they weren't allowed to wear. Tanya namihachi, ezu atarot kalot, ir shel zahav. Aval oseh ta kipashal milet. She could wear like a hat made of wool. Okay, I don't know. It doesn't really seem to me like a crown or something nice to get married in. But I guess even if it's fine wool, okay. We actually saw this milet in Shabbat also. It was considered a fine wool. I remember. Tana, af al chupat chatanim kazru. Okay, even on the chupav chatanim they made a gzera. Okay, here's a braita that adds another thing that wasn't listed. My chupat chatanim. What is this? Zehorit hamuzhevet. Okay, this seems to be this. Okay, obviously what they're saying is you can't say people can't get married under a chuppah. That's the way you get married. You need knisat tachat chuppah. So what do they mean? They had this. I actually find it strange that it was red, but they had this red thing with gold ornaments on it, and that they weren't allowed to use. Tanya namihachi elohen chuppat chatanim zehorit hamuzhevet aval oseh papirot v'tola b'kol ma shiyirtzeh. But they were able to make these things out of papyrus, and then they could hang on it things even if they were gold. But this red thing that had gold ornaments sewed onto it, that was a problem.
I think that's how Indian brides get married.
Indian brides get married with red? Interesting. Yeah, I thought it was very interesting, right? You don't generally think of red when you think of a wedding. B'shelo yomad b'no yivanit. Okay, this is interesting. What's this yivanit that you're not allowed to teach your son, right? It sounds like secular, right? You know, Greek. Okay, so now we'll talk about what this is. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, this was a famous period in time where there were two Cheshmonai sons, and one was against the other. Okay, one was in the city of Jerusalem, and one had a siege on the city of Jerusalem. Okay, Hayah Horkanus mi bachutz, v'Aristobulus mi bifnim. Horkanus was on the outside; he was besieging the city, and Aristobulus, his brother, was inside, and he was in charge on the inside. B'chol yom v'yom hayu mishalshalin dinarim b'kupa. Every day they needed for the korbanot. They didn't have animals inside the city, so what did they do? They would put money outside the walls, shalshalim dinarim bekupa, into a kupa, umalin lahen tmidin, and they would bring them animals to sacrifice for the korban tamid. Hayah sham zaken echad, there was one zaken, shayah makir b'chokhma yevanit. Okay, he understood chokhma yevanit, which seems to be, we're gonna see, seems to be a language and a way of speaking to the enemy. La'az lahem b'chokhma yivanit. So he told them in this language, Amar lahem kol zman she'oskim ba'avodah ein nimsirim b'yedchem. You're never going to win if they keep up their korbanot. So lemachar shulshalu lahem dinarim b'kupa. So the next day when they went to give the money for the animal, v'he'elu lahem chazir. They gave them a pig instead. Kevan shigel lechatzi koma. As soon as the pig started going up to half the height of the wall, na'at tzipornav. Okay, there was a huge earthquake. Okay, in other words, once the pig put his you know, dug his nails into the wall, okay, the whole Eretz Yisrael shook. By the way, I read in the Koran, they say that in Josephus, there's a whole account of this, something very similar to this story, and how there was this thing that happened and with a chazir, and it seems like a very similar version of this story. In that same year, there were other things that happened. Omer migagot srifim mibigat socher. That they had to bring things from very far away. Ini, is that really true? This chokhma yivanit. Okay, so basically, why they bring the story? Because they said, look where chokhma yivanit gets you, right? This zakeh knew chokhma yivanit. He was therefore able to communicate with the enemy, and he basically brought the downfall of Israel. So now, v'ha'amar Rebbe, is it really true that you can't speak, you can't teach your son chokhma yivanit? Doesn't Rebbe say, be'eretz Yisrael lashon sursi lama? Ela, and it's why do people speak in Eretz Yisrael, Lashon Sursi? Ela, I Lashon HaKodesh, I Lashon Yivanit. They should either speak Lashon HaKodesh or they should speak Lashon Yivanit. That's very weird, right? It seems to imply that they would speak Lashon Yivanit. V'amar Rav Yosef, Bavel Lashon Arami Lama. Why are they speaking Aramit in Bavel? Ela, O Lashon HaKodesh, O Lashon Parsi. So again, that has nothing to do with our issue. That's just another statement that's very similar. But the point is, it says you should be speaking Lashon Yivanit. So what do they say? Lashon Yivanit Lachud v'chochmat Yivanit Lachud. There's two different things. One is Lashon Yivanit, the language of Greek, that's okay. But chochmat Yivanit, which seems to be this other language, and that's the language that was spoken by the important people. Okay, that was the special language that you can't learn. So now they say, really? Chochma Yivanit Miyasira? Is it really right? They keep having a problem with this. We seem to have other situations where people did learn Chochma Yivanit Miyasira. The Hamar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishum Rashbag, my dichtiv eini olelal eini olelal nafshi mikol benot iri. There's a pasuk in Eicha. Okay, what does this mean? Elef yiladim hayu bebeit Abba. Okay, there were 1,000. Rashbag is saying this about his father. My father, Rabban Gamliel, had 1,000 students. Chamesh meot lamdu Torah, v'chamesh meot lamdu chochma yivanit. Okay, 500 learned Torah, and 500 learned this chochma yivanit. V'lo nishtayar mehen ela ani kan. Okay, I'm the only one who was left. Ben achi abba ba'asya. I'm here, and the son of my cousin, basically, right? The ben achi abba, right? My cousin. My nephew, the son of the brother of my father. That's my cousin, the Asya. Okay, so I'm here, and he's in Asya, and we're the only ones left of all the students he had. But it sounds like Rabban Gamliel was teaching his students Chochma Yivanit, or they all spoke it, right? So how could that be? About the Chochma Yivanit also? Yeah, there was something about. I don't remember if it was specifically termed Chochma Yivanit, or it was something else. With Elisha ben Avuya. Yeah, there's something about it also. You're right. But that was, I think, Sfarim. I think there was... it was Sfarim. Yeah. I don't think it was Chochma Yivanit. Right. Okay. So Shani Shobei Rabban Gamliel de Krovim L'Malchut Ave. They were close to the Malchut. They needed it, right? Remember, we have all these situations where people who have important positions and they need to be in touch with the Malchut. So therefore, they were able to learn it. But under normal circumstance, if you don't need it for some particular purpose, then you're not allowed to learn it. Titania, misafar, how did you pronounce that? Misaper kumi hareza midarchei ha'mori. If you have a haircut like this kumi, it's a type of haircut, that's the darchei ha'mori. It's like the non-Jews. It's unclear exactly what this is. You shave part of your head off. There's a few different opinions about what exactly this haircut is. We've seen this also before, this type of haircut that the Amorim had. Of Tubilis ben Reuven, hitiru l'sapar kumi, shu karov l'machut. They allowed people to do it, okay? This Avtulis ben Reuven, they allowed him to have a haircut like this because he was karov l'machut. So they're basically bringing this as a proof, just like they were allowed to have haircuts like the non-Jews because they were karov l'machut and they needed to be in touch with them. Also, Beit Rabban Gamliel was allowed. B'pumas ha'acharon, gazru shelo tetzei kala ba'apiryon. So remember, what then the Chachamim said, but they could. My time amishum tzni'uta. Okay, this is very interesting. They carried the kala na'apiryon so people wouldn't see her. So she was covered. And it was a tzni'ut issue. And that's why, even though, on the one hand, it's very fancy, and that's why they wanted to cancel it. On the other hand, the rabbi said, no, but, you know, we want to make sure that there's tzni'ut, and therefore it has two purposes almost, and therefore we're going to keep it. Mishemet Rabban Yochanan b'tela chochma. Tana Rabbanan. Here's another version of this, okay, about all these rabbis dying and what happened when they died. Mishemet Rabbi Eliezer nignaz sefer Torah. Okay, obviously the sefer Torah wasn't nignaz, right, but what are they saying? It's as if there was no more sefer Torah anymore, because he understood the Torah very well, and no one else can understand it as well after that. Mishemet Rabbi Yoshua b'tela etza u'machshava. Okay, he was a man of wise wisdom that was able to give advice to people. Mishemet Rabbi Akiva batluz ro'e Torah v'nistatmu mayanot ha'chochma. Okay, the arms of Torah and the wells of chochma were all blocked up. Mishemet Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria batlu atarot chochma. She'ateret chachamim oshram. Here we get to the wealth issue. He was very wealthy. Where do we know this from? The famous story in Bracha, when he becomes the Nasi, when they kick out Rabban Gamliel. By the way, these are all the characters in that story, right? Rabban Gamliel, who who, remember, he was the man of Prishtut, asceticism, right? He wouldn't let people into his Beit Midrash. He closed up the Beit Midrash only for those people who were Tocho Kevoro. Then Rabbi Yeshua rebelled against them, right? And as he embarrassed Rabbi Yeshua, and then they all took him down. And then they tried to find who was going to be the leader. They tried Rabbi Akiva. He didn't have Zechut HaVot, right? They tried other people. In the end, they took Rabbi Yeshua they wanted to put, but he was Nogea B'davar. They couldn't put him. So then who did they take? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because he had Zechut HaVot and he had wealth. And that's where you see that wealth, I told you we were going to get back to this, that wealth on the beginning of the daf was negative, but here it's used positively. And once he died, Batlu Atarot Chochma, the crown of Chochma. Why the crown? Because it was wealth. It was because he was wealthy, he had the respect of all the people. And because once he died, there was no one else that came, you know, to his caliber of both wealth and Chochma. Mishamet Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa batlu anshe ma'aseh, right, the people who could do miracles. Mishamet Abi Yossi ben Katnuta batlu chasidim, we saw this before. V'lam nekro shmo Abi Yossi ben Katnuta, Katonta, why was he called Abi Yossi, the son of Katonta? Shayam miktane chasidim, he was the smallest of the chasidim, he was the last one left. Mishamet ben Aza batlu ha-shaktanim, this is the same as the Mishnah, right, the diligent people. Mishamet ben Zoma batlu ha-darshanim, those who could darshan. Mishamet Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel ala govai v'rabut sarot, the locusts came up and our problems, you know, became multiplied. Mishamet Rebbe, and when Rebbe died, huchpilu hatzarot, they even got multiplied much, much worse. Okay? Now, you have to understand, this also corresponds, Rebbe's life corresponds with after the Bar Kochba revolt and when the Romans really took over and things got much, much, much worse. That's when also most of the Jews left Israel. Okay? This is really, it's giving a, you know, taking a historic events and giving it religious significance and showing that it was all because of the Talmidei Chachamim, that that's what, you know, once they were no longer with us, they were no longer giving us the support that we needed, right, the religious support to allow everything to flourish. Okay, seems to be ending on a very, very negative note, this Masechet. But there's a little bit of hope here. Mishamet Rebbe batla anava v'yirat chet. Okay, this is what we saw, the last line of the Mishnah. When he died, it was the end of humility and fear of sin. Amar le Rav Yosef l'tana. Okay, this is a very strange sentence we're going to see. Rav Yosef says to the Tana, now who's the Tana? Rav Yosef's living, fourth generation Amoraim. He's clearly not talking to a Tana. Tana's a, right? So what does it mean, l'tana? To the people who were Mishnayim, the Mishnayot and the Braita, right? The people who brought the, who said, oh, this is the Mishnah, right? And they quoted the Mishnah to him and he said, wait a minute. Lo tidne anava, you shouldn't say betela anava, di'ika ana, because there's me. Right? Now, what a crazy lie, right? In other words,
it's not very humble.
It's not very, right? Okay, so the Mefarshim obviously, you know, say, what's going on here? How could he possibly be saying this? So, you know, you could say all sorts of things. Maybe this is meant to be almost, you know, it's proving the point. There really is no anava, if that's what he's saying. The other, you know, the Mefarshim try to side and say, well, obviously, you know, there's a time and a place for humility. Sometimes you need to be the one to say, look, learn from me, and I'm humble, and, you know, and that it was okay that he said it. If you go with the approach that it was really okay that he said it, which I think you have to, because I think that's what the Gemara is doing here, even though it's difficult, but basically, this is hope, right? What's happening? He's living fourth generation in Moraim. So remember, all these statements are Tanaitic statements. They're said, not all of them, some of them came later also. But they're all basically saying, right, everything's going bad. Remember what happened historically. So there was the Churban in the year 70. The Mishnah sealed in the year 200, right? There's the Bar Kochba revolt in between. I think it was like 130-something is the Bar Kochba revolt. And things are just getting worse and worse and worse. And eventually, most of the Jews get kicked out of Israel. There's almost nobody living there, right? That's why the Yerushalmi is not as learned as much as the Bavli. There are some Jews there, but it's very rough for them. They end up getting kicked out much earlier than the Bavlim. You know, the Talmud Bavli ends much later than the Talmud Yerushalmi because there's no more Jews anymore past like the year either 350 or 400. There's a machloket exactly, like among the academics, what time the Yerushalmi actually finishes, whereas the Bavli goes till the year about 500, Rav Ashi's time. And it's basically, right, things are just looking bad, and then what happens? Most of the Jews just move to Bavel. And in Bavel, life is actually not bad. Life is pretty good, and they build up, and they have a community there. And Rav Yosef is basically saying, hey, look, these are statements that were made, but they're no longer true. And that's, I think, what he's trying to tell the people. You know, you say Batel Anava, but there's me, and there are Anavim around. And it's not just me, there's other people too. And Amar Le Rav Nachman Latana, Rav Nachman also says to the Tana, Lo Titne Yirat Chet Di'ika Ana. Okay, don't say the Batela Yirat Chet, it's not as bad as it seems, because there's me. And that's where I think the Masechet is ending on a hopeful note, saying that, you know, when you're feeling like all is bad, that things actually come around, you know, and that sometimes you feel like things are just never going to get any better, and it's just getting worse and worse. And those, you know, the talk about the every day the challah is worse than the last, and, you know, things are just going bad, 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 bad. But then, you know, at a certain point, they start to go up. So even though a lot of that was talking about the negative, in the end, it ends on a positive note. Hadron alaf egla rufa uslich alat mesefet sota. Okay, before we do the siyum and the hadron alafs, I wanted to just sort of talk about some ideas. I don't have them formulated 100% into a theory, but I wanted to throw out a bunch of ideas.
Should we bring the food now, or do you want to do that?
No, we'll do that after. We'll,
that's part. All right.
Yeah, we'll finish this and then we'll do that. So I found an article of Dr. Rabbi Avi Wolfish, and he talks about, he's a Mishnah expert, and he has all these theories about, he learns the Mishnayot in a literary manner. And he takes the Mishnayot and he has a whole theory about it. His theory isn't 100% convincing or tight, but what he points out is very, very interesting. So he points out lots of times when you do literary things, there's often the beginning, the end, and the middle. And the middle is usually the center has, you know. Now the middle perek was chapter 5. And in chapter 5, if you remember, we had all these things where it jumped into the Bo Bayom, Rabbi Akiva was Doresh, and he darshaned all sorts of things. And one of them was about the area, the 2,000 Amah outside the city of the Levi'im, and they would measure that. So anyway, it talks about measuring there. And what he points out is that this measuring concept comes up within the whole Masechet. It starts out with in the first parak, Midah Keneged Midah of the Sota. And then it ends, in the end of this Masechet, with the Egla Arufa, where they have to measure outside the city. He actually points out very interestingly that with Tchum Shabbat and the Tchum of the city of the Levi'im, you measured from the city outward. And when it comes to the Rotzchim, you know, the Egla Arufa, you measure from the spot into the city. It's almost like a flip. And then you have, obviously, the Midah Keneged Midah, which is God's measuring. And so he builds up this concept about the measuring. If you think about what is this measuring, right? What does it mean to measure your steps, right? To think about what you're doing. And it's, I think there's a large concept here about taking responsibility. And that the measuring here, who does the measuring, by the way? It's the Chachamim, right? They do the measuring both to measure the tchum of the city, right? They have to go out and measure. And from the, right, remember we said specifically the Chachamim have to be the ones, right? The Sanhedrin. They have to come out from their place, go to the spot, right? Which almost, if you think about it, we didn't really talk about them, but I'm thinking about it now. Sometimes, you know, leaders are in their Dalet Amo, right? You think about the Sanhedrin. They sat in this Lishkat HaGazit all the time, right? They weren't allowed to all leave at any given point, right? They had to always be there. And what it's saying is there's some problem outside and you have to be there. You have to go see what's going on. And then I think what it's talking about in this Masechet, if you think about the main issue is the Sota, and which really is a personal thing, right? But this personal thing, we talked about this in the very beginning, becomes a very public thing, right? Which we find very strange, right? Why are you airing out your dirty laundry in public and all that? And I think if you link together all these ideas, what you basically are, what it's saying, and I really think it links into this last statement and the last new dapim, or the last daf particular, where we talked about everything's going bad, and who do they put the blame on? The Chachamim. In other words, it was the Chachamim that held together the society. And we no longer have Chachamim like that. You know, he died and we no longer have that. And he died and we no longer have that. And that it's the responsibility on the Chachamim to keep everybody together. And that's why they have to get involved. And as what he also points out in this article is how, you know, both the Kohen is involved in both ceremonies, and that, you know, it's very important that they be, and it's almost, if you compare these midot, who measures, it starts out with God as the one who's measuring. And almost like the Chachamim are messengers of God. And their job is to keep things in control. And if you think about what two things we're talking about, the Egla Arufa and the Sota. First of all, it's very interesting. We don't have time to go through it. But he talks about the things that are similar about both of them, which we saw this repetition about Eid Echad, right? If one witness comes, then you don't drink the Sota waters. If one witness comes, you don't do the Egla Arufa. And a lot of it, we even saw the same sugya word for word. And there were a bunch of things he talks about, the issue of suspended ceremonies. What if they're both cases? I mean, the real thing that combines them both is that they're both cases where there's a doubt, right? And we don't know what the situation is. We don't know who killed this person. We don't know if she did this, so right, if she really cheated on him or not. We have certain evidence to indicate something, but we don't have enough. And, you know, it's both these situations of the unknown and what we do. And what it's saying here is that the Chachamim, the responsibility lies on them You know, you might have thought maybe their job is not to get involved in people's personal lives, but what they're saying is no, everything, you're responsible for the whole thing. And that in Judaism in general, there's this whole communal concept. It's not every man for himself, and the importance of the community of getting together to resolve these issues is very important. And when it comes to Giloy Arayot and Shvichut Damim, which are the two of the, you know, Avodah Zarah doesn't so much appear here. I'm trying to think if it appears much. We didn't really come across that, but, you know, if you think of the three, right, there were minor references, but not really. But, you know, two of the three Averot here, Shvichut Damim and Giloy Arayot, are, you know, these are the two issues, and they're saying these are issues where, you know, number one, the people have to be careful about what they do, but when that gets out of control, and almost like when the Churban, right? In other words, when things get totally out of control, you need the Chachamim to be responsible to come back. And there was this whole talk also about the Dayanim and about Shochad and things like that that came up. You know, there's this whole issue of moral responsibility of the leaders to be there and make sure that everything stays intact. And that almost maybe this connection of starting with the Midah Keneged Midah of Hashem and then going to the, you know, the Chachamim have to measure out outside the city, they have to measure back into the city. And that the idea being that they're in place of God, because we don't have God in our lives, and even we had this whole thing about Batzla Nivuah, right? We no longer have Nivuot anymore, and that they take the place of the Nivuah, and they take the place of God in our world, and therefore they're ultimately responsible for all these things that go on. So that the Sota is not, right? You think about what is all, the entire Masechet of this Sota woman, because it's not just about her and her husband and their relationship, right? We talked very much about how this is all about the relationship between a couple and how to have the relationship so that the husband's not overly suspicious and the wife isn't overly, you know, promiscuous, and having this whole thing be public so that they control their own personal lives. But when it gets out of control, then where do we go from there? Then you have to, the Chachamim have to get involved and the leaders. In other words, it's all about leadership. They have to be in charge, and maybe that, again, this is just some thoughts. You can, you know, they need a farther to go in terms of development, but that's an idea to stick with. You know, certainly the way the Masechet ends is putting all the communal responsibility.
I think, taking what you're saying a step farther, one of the things that I think that is a really nice comparison is that we have to pursue justice till the end, not just the leaders, because in the Egla Rufa, it says we don't want innocent, we don't want the blood of innocence on our head. Mm-hmm. And I think with the Sota, you had to take it to the end to prove her innocence. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really like a cool comparison between these two. Like, they had to find out about this dead body because people, all people, don't want guilt on their, they don't want doubt about innocence mm-hmm. or guilt. So I think to me that was what this comparison was. Mm-hmm. You had to take it to the absolute end to prove her innocence. Mm-hmm. And you have to here prove the community's innocence,
right,
too.
Yeah, fair, right. So both are also about proving innocence and showing we did all we could, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the Sota, right? Like, you did all you can to get to that point of, you know. And then obviously the other connection is that these two things no longer exist. These ceremonies are meant to get us out of doubt, and maybe that's why the Masechet ends with this depressing tone almost. We now no longer have a good way to deal with this stuff. And maybe that's what it's saying also. Community has to be responsible for these things, despite the fact that we don't have the Sota waters and we don't have, right, the hole in the middle, right? Almost as if it was an afterthought. But in the middle of that were these two major lines, which is Mishrabu Aratchanim, there's no more Egla Rufa. Mishrabu Anu Afim, there's no more Sota waters. But yet, you know, despite that, we have no choice but to still somehow be responsible for that and resolve those doubts that we can no longer resolve in some other manner, you know.
And then the last line by saying that there still is hope.
Right.
So even though everything looks like it's done and finished and we've reached an end point, there's...
Exactly. There's still hope. That ends, I think that end thing is very crucial about there still being hope. And again, what's he saying? That's why almost, yes, he says, I'm humble, and the other guy says, I'm a Yerechet, but what they were saying is, I'm willing to say, and that's why I think we laughed a little bit, but really, he's saying, I am a leader. How often do leaders get up and say, I am a leader, right? Sometimes they're shy, they say, oh, I'm humble, and I can't say that, because it'll look like, you know, and they don't have broad shoulders enough, and these guys got up and said it. We are your leaders, and we're going to take responsibility for things. So, okay, food for thought. So we'll do the Siyum now.